So farm to school really is my thing, but I would love to see my farm to school be, you know, not just 10, 12, 15%. I'd love to see that 20, 25. So the more that you can do and build around your community, the better off your community is. And, you know, they're the ones that are supporting you too.
Welcome to the 385th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. On an October afternoon, when the temperature hovered around an unseasonably hot 90 degrees, I walked into a cooler that provided a fresh, crisp glimpse at the potential for getting locally produced food into school cafeterias. Sitting on shelves were eggs, along with a variety of fruits and vegetables, all produced by farmers in the region. As she ticked off everything that was present in this chilly pantry, my tour guide, Janine Bowman, was clearly pleased with the bounty of the season and excited about what role it would play on future lunchroom menus. As the food service director for the Morris Area Schools in West Central Minnesota, Janine is responsible for providing 850 lunches and 500 breakfasts daily to elementary and high school kids. She grew up on a dairy farm in the region and has long been interested in sourcing as much of her school's food as possible direct from the fields, garden plots, orchards, and pastures in the area. With the support of grants provided by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, Janine is now at the point where around 10% of her meal program's annual budget is devoted to farm-to-school purchases. Some of those farmers Janine deals with directly. She also relies heavily on the Real Food Hub in Wilmer, Minnesota, an initiative run by Beverly Doherty that aggregates food from regional farmers and distributes it to schools, restaurants, and grocery stores, as well as directly to eaters. While interviewing Janine for this podcast, I was struck by how much her experience with farm to school, the opportunities as well as the challenges, mirrors what other food service providers shared in a recent report LSB helped put together. The report, Building the Farm to School Network in West Central Minnesota, is based on interviews with 13 food service directors across 12 school districts in an 8-county region. Results of an online survey of 31 farmers in and around the 5-county region of the Upper Minnesota River Valley were also included in the report, which LSP did in partnership with various local and state educational institutions and government agencies. Farm to School has been receiving a lot of attention in recent years, given its potential for generating consistent markets for farmers while providing healthy food for kids. Such initiatives can also generate a fair amount of local economic activity. An analysis by the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy and University of Minnesota Extension shows that during the 2023 fiscal year alone, over $3 million in economic activity was generated in the state by increased demand for products supported by Department of Ag farm-to-school grants. The analysis calculated that for every dollar spent on farm-to-school in Minnesota, an additional 94 cents is generated in economic activity via businesses such as farm input suppliers and through increased spending. That's one reason LSP, in collaboration with partners such as IETP and Renewing the Countryside, has been working during the past few sessions of the Minnesota Legislature to procure increased state funding for farm-to-school. In general, these efforts have been successful. Turns out getting fresh, local food onto kids' plates is attractive to folks on both sides of the political aisle. What the Farm to School survey in West Central Minnesota found is that although not all of the food service directors interviewed are currently purchasing from local farmers, there is a lot of interest in doing so. But, according to the report, numerous barriers stand in the way of either starting a Farm to School initiative or expanding an already existing one, including labor shortages, limited knowledge of how to connect with local farmers and processors, product seasonality, inadequate storage and prep space, and uncertainty about the availability of government grants. Janine Bowman and her staff at the Morris Schools have been able to overcome some of these barriers. In fact, the walk-in cooler she showed me is one way they get around the problem of matching up the school year with the growing season. But other challenges remain, including kitchen staffing shortages and being able to connect consistently with the right farmer raising the right product at the right time. After she gave me a tour of the kitchen and storage facilities at the elementary school, Janine sat down to talk about those challenges, as well as the role state grants have played in helping her overcome some of them. We also chatted about why supporting local farmers with the school's food dollar is about more than good nutrition. So, Janine, I want to talk to you about Farm to School. Give me a little background on how long you've been involved with doing Farm to School and sourcing from local farmers, and what got you interested in it, because it's more work. I mean, let's face it, we're not going to lie there. It's more work, it's more managerial, and just more effort in the part of the kitchen. It's not as easy as just getting stuff off the Cisco truck or whatever. So what drew you, I guess, when did you get interested in this, and why, why did you think it was maybe worth the extra effort there?
So I started in Morris about 16 years ago, and I was a food service director at Benson at the time. I did both districts for about 13 years. But when I started, they were getting apples from Swenson Orchard down by Monty, and they would just get them for a little bit in the fall, and they got to taste test and do these different things. So I hadn't done anything really in Benson, but when I saw this was happening, I'm like, this is a really cool idea. I love this. I grew up on a farm. We had dairy. We grew everything we ate. So to me, that was just second nature. So we started with the apples. We started doing them as long as we could. So I think the second year I was here, we started serving them into November. And we got into the point where we were serving them into like January. As long as I could get the apples, I was getting them from the farm. And I still do that. It kind of got to where I started to look for different things. I started hearing more about this Farm to School movement. And I thought it was a real great way to showcase our local producers. So from that point on, we really just kept adding little things. I did wild rice. I tried some pork back then. I know I would pull in like local squash, some sweet corn, that type of thing. About 3-4 years ago, I received a grant, and I kind of went all out because it was a year that I'm like, I can do this. We can do all these things. So I pulled in that school year. I had about 34, 35 farm to school items that I served that year. Now, I still serve probably about 25 to 30 throughout the year, but you find out what goes well and what doesn't. And some things you try for a couple years. And if it doesn't work, like asparagus was great. They like it fresh, but they don't like when I freeze it. But I found that the kids really liked it. It is a lot more work, but it is so worth it when you see the kids and you see them looking and they're like, oh, you got the good apples. When I had ran out of beef patties and that I get from a local farmer, and the kids are like, I had to buy them, and they're like, what happened to our burgers? And you're like, I'm so sorry.
The real burgers.
Yep, can I have the real ones back? And I'm like, yes, I'll get the good ones again. It just didn't work to get them at that time. So it's fun when you hear those things. And then when you see, you know, like the fresh stuff, they get excited about the watermelon. They get excited about the cantaloupe. Radishes, they aren't quite so excited about, but I'm finding them eating them. So we're going to try some different ways of how to do radishes. And experimenting is really fun, doing different recipes and finding different things that they might try. I never thought that kids would just eat a radish, and they do, you know, and the different, and I do that not just Farm to School. I'll do the other products that I can get just to bring something new in, but it's always challenging them. The kids are all excited now about the tomatoes, the little grape tomatoes, because they come in different colors.
Oh, yeah.
And they asked, are they still tomatoes? And we're like, yes. Well, how come they're different colors? So we had to explain, just like people and, you know, trees and flowers are all different colors, tomatoes can be different colors too.
Yeah.
So that was a fun one-to-one with our kids.
And I guess when you got that first grant, what difference did that make as far as you able to being able to up your game a little bit?
It really helped the fact that the one year it was they paid for everything, so I could try anything. And then the next grant that I got, they paid for half. So it really helps so that we can try the new things. It gives us some chance to try different recipes to find out what works. You know, because anytime you have a raw product, it's just like at home, if you try it, you tweak it. And we've done that with different products, like even getting like a pork belly so we can do our own bacon bits. But it took us, by the third pork belly that we had, the third piece, we finally figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
So by having those grants, it really helps to give us the chance to experiment and find, they may not like one recipe, but they'll find the kids will like another one. Or maybe my high school kids will like it, but my elementary won't. So it's just finding out what works on which end.
And how long were you trying to at least do a little bit of Farm to School before you got your first grant?
10 years. Yeah, so it took many years. And then when I saw the grants, I finally had time. Because they take a little bit of time to write and to figure out what you're going to do. And I kind of have a different philosophy on farm to school, which not all schools do. But my philosophy is that I want to get a product in and that the kids will consider that to be the norm. Just like at home, you're going to buy a certain brand of a product. I want my products, these certain products, to be farm to school. So like all of my beef patties, no matter if they're elementary or high school, they're a raw beef patty, and they're farm to school so that the kids are getting the best product that I can give. I might have to spend less money on something else because they will cost me a little bit more, but they're worth it because the kids are going to eat them. So yeah, having things that's the norm and that's what we do, that's kind of my goal. So like when you talk about apples, I have those, they come in, they start at school, and I will have those farm to school apples all the way through Christmas and into January, sometimes into February. The kids expect that. Mm-hmm. It's not only good for my kids to be eating that, it's great for the producer because they know that we're going to be purchasing apples all fall and as many as we can get up until they have none. So it really helps them. And I'm a little bit more flexible that I will take things in and then change my menus to meet that, especially like fruits and vegetables. Kids, a lot of times, unless it's grapes, I'm sorry, you just got to have the grapes. And if I have watermelon on there, I better be serving watermelon that day. Yeah. But I could serve watermelon and cantaloupe in the same week and put cantaloupe instead of another vegetable or fruit, and they'd be just fine with that. Yeah. And sometimes I'll just add it in. It's an extra one, and they're great with that because they like it.
Can you give me an idea of the kind of what you've used the grant? So there's different kinds of grants. There's some for procuring the food itself, some for equipment. Have you gotten different kinds, or what kind of grants have you, what have you been using the grants for, I guess?
The first grant was just basically for food, and that one was called a full plate grant. The second grant I got, was a full grant, but it was for a lesser amount, and then I did get some equipment, and that one was a slicer. A lot of the other equipment that I've bought throughout the years, like a new smaller walk-in freezer and cooler, just came out of my budget. I was able to use that for that, you know, like some of the other things. I know I'm going to go up for hopefully get another grant this next year or this and in a few months. And there I'm going to be buying some things, or I'm hoping to get things like extra blades for my Roboco that I already have. So it's just nice. And then just updating a few of my equipment just to make it work better and do more, especially if I'm going to get into more freezing of certain vegetables.
Can you give me a rough idea of dollar amounts that you're getting? I know it varies, but what kind of dollar amounts are we talking about?
So the first grant I got was $36,000, and then I got an extra bonus of $5,000, and then I got another $1,500 that kind of all came out of that same grant year. And then the last grant was, I think, $8,600, plus I got about a $1,600 equipment grant with that. I think that's about, or maybe it was $8,600 altogether, so... So not huge amounts, and that one was a 50-50.
So the school district must be behind you on this. I mean, if you're able to get them to pony up some money and they helped you put in those coolers, you know, that was out of that budget kind of thing.
Right. So a lot of that, the extra money comes out of what's my fund balance that we have. So my program has to actually make money. But the school board is very much behind me because a lot of them are local producers. So they're very much for the farm to school. This last year, our wellness policy we had redone, and we included having farm to school products as part of our wellness policy. So the school is very much behind us and very much supports us. And a lot of parents appreciate it also. Every year in November, I do bring your parents to lunch day at my elementary and my high school. My elementary, I'll have about 400 parents that will come in throughout the week. So we do two grades a day, and I always try to promote a farm to school item every day. And it's really interesting to see parents when I talk to them and tell them that this is what came from local farms. Just to see the fact that they're excited about that and that they appreciate it, and they're like, well, it tasted really good. That's always the best thing I can hear, is that the parents liked it too. Or I'll hear, well, their kids always talk about your apples. I don't know. Or they talk about this menu item. I'm so glad that you serve that. So
what all kind of food are we talking about? What are you, you know, throughout a school year, what all are you sourcing here that's from local producers?
So I serve beef. I serve pork. I serve eggs. Eggs, actually, we crack eggs every Thursday morning at my high school to make breakfast sandwiches. And at the elementary, we'll do fried eggs with toast. Those are my main proteins, those three. I also do wild rice. That comes in through my distributor. It's a canned product, but it is a Minnesota-made product. Mm-hmm. So as far as, like, fruits, I do watermelon, cantaloupe, apples, raspberries. I've done some blueberries. I think that's it for the fruit. For the vegetables, tomatoes, cherry, and we also buy the big tomatoes that we make what I call a slurry. We basically pulverize the whole tomato and make a sauce. And we use that in different, like, chilies and different and spaghetti sauce. So we have tomatoes, and we have potatoes, and we have peppers, and we have radishes, and we have onions and squash. I'm also moving into frozen corn, green beans, edamame. We also use maple syrup and honey. We have tried local greens. I just haven't gotten into that quite yet. Oh, cucumbers also. We've done local cucumbers, and that's always good. We also have a school garden that we'll get some of the products from, but I think that's most of it.
Yeah, so, you know, roughly how many farmers are you sourcing from throughout a typical school year, and kind of what geographical area are we covering that I guess do these farmers kind of represent?
So I try to keep my farmers to be in Minnesota, and because I use our local food hub out of Wilmer, sometimes they will be as much as 150 miles away. I try to get most of them a little bit closer in, within 100 miles, but there are times to get a certain product you have to go farther. So that's kind of our area. And last year I think I bought from about 30-some farmers between, you know, different, the beef, you know, I bought one steer from one person. It's nice to have a wide variety. And a lot of those were through the food hub. So they would buy where they could get them. Yeah. So that's how I got a larger. I really work directly with about five or six on a regular basis. There's a few that I've worked, you know, before, trying to work directly with them. And there's some that I'm trying to move into more just buying from them.
And for folks who aren't familiar, so Beverly Doherty she's kind of running, her and her son Jason are running the food hub out of Wilmer. And we've done a podcast with Beverly before too. And she's kind of a distribution for their, she's kind of aggregating food and distributing it to schools like yours. So I think that must be a real valuable thing to have, kind of, because that is the big issue for local foods systems, is how do we compete with that very efficient transportation system that the, you know, where we have crazy situations where it's cheaper to sometimes bring in tomatoes from California than to source local tomatoes, crazy things like that. But this sounds like that something like that can really help a school like yours to have that kind of transportation distribution system.
It really does. It really makes it so that I can have a big variety of products. If I didn't have the food hub, I would have a lot less products, and I would have to figure out how to get it from, you know, like from Lismore, which may only be half an hour, 45 minutes, but it's not a direction that I travel to work on. Mm-hmm. So it's not something I can easily go pick up, and I would have to try to either do it during the day or have someone else. So either which way, I'd have to pay for transportation. There are things that I personally pick up on my way to work, like our beef patties. I pick up from the butcher because he's 10 minutes from my house. So I just swing there on my way to work, get it, and head to work. That's helpful. But yeah, the food hub has been really helpful. And then finding me different products. Like this year, I asked her, I said, do you have Minnesota pears? Can you find those? So she will go find the products for me so that I can serve something different.
So do you have a rough idea of how much, on a yearly basis, how much money you're pumping back into the local food economy in terms of paying farmers for the food that they produce? I mean, is that something you track?
I do. Last year, I spent about $35,000 to $40,000 of my food budget was in local purchases. I have about a $300,000 food budget. So yeah, about 10% or so.
That's pretty significant.
It really is, considering, you know, that includes like the bigger ticket items like our beef. You know, we all know that beef is going up, but I also had pork and I also had chicken, which I don't think I mentioned earlier. So some of those products, those are the bigger ticket items, and that raises it, but it's they're great products. So, and the more we can do, the better off it is, especially now with USDA and our restrictions on Buy American are going up. We have more restrictions coming in. So serving local food really helps with that part of it. You know, I already know that 10% of my budget is already local. I don't have to even think about it because there's less things that we can buy foreign as far as food.
You're getting the bulk of it through the food hub out of Wilmer, but you are dealing directly with farmers. And I was wondering how that relationship works kind of logistically.
Normally, I start about January, February, looking what am I going to need for the next school year. And so when they're, especially if I'm doing a grant, I'll already know who I'm purchasing from because I've already made those contacts. But as far as like a lot of the other products, like if it's the proteins, the beef, the chicken, mm-hmm. they're longer growing seasons. So we need to know early what we need. So I'll call them. I'll call a few people to find out, you know, who's raising chickens. Are they going to the ones that I purchased from before? Are they going to do it? I still have to do my due diligence on pricing. However, it really makes it easy when you have those relationships with them that you can just say, call and say, hey, can you do this next year for us again? Sometimes, like this last year, who I purchased chickens from the year before, they said, no, I really can't. But the butcher that I use said, well, hey, she was talking to me. Do you want me to raise the chickens for you? Because I was planning on raising chickens. Said, great. What's your price? So, and it was the same price, so I was fine with that. And he's actually now finding my beef for me, as long as they're local and they have to be Minnesota farmers, but he finds them locally. And I just tell him what I need approximately per month. And we chat. He texts me. I love getting texts at 9 o'clock at night, you know, because I'm like, oh, yep, we got to have this handled. So, but yeah, it's, you know, I tell him what I need and he'll find it for me. Sometimes getting those relationships, once you have that relationship for a few years, it makes things, you find out what's easier for both sides. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's why the food hub works well. My butcher works really well, which is K&S Poultry out of Kirkhoven. They, you know, and then I share that information with other schools. That's the nice thing about schools is that we like to share the information. We're not competing against each other. So we share and say, hey, have you heard this? Or have you tried this product? Or, you know, this is where I'm getting this from. And so having those connections to really work well.
Have you been surprised at how much food is available locally?
Yes. I've always known that a lot of people grow, but the more I'm in it, the more I realize just how close some of them are. And I was just at a meeting Wednesday and visited two different farms down by the cities and realizing the different things that they grow. And I'm like, I really need to get out more and really see what's out there and what people have. So it's always interesting to see what's out there. You know, what are they growing? The one farm I went to, they were growing strawberries and they were going to grow all the way in through November. And I'm thinking, well, I buy 3 cases of strawberries every week that are fresh. This would be wonderful if I was closer. Yeah. So now I'm on the lookout of what can I find that's close?
Yeah.
You know, what's here, you know, within 50 miles?
Yeah.
You know, and there's been places that I've driven and picked up things, you know, just because they're on my way.
The other big issue for schools is jibing the school year with the growing season. They don't overlap perfectly. But it sounds like you've been able to get around that a little bit by storage. You have freezer space. You're able to kind of do kind of what people do who have big gardens or whatever, but, you know, do your version of canning, I guess, but doing kind of that through the winter storage type of thing.
Yes, we do a lot of freezing of different products, and that's one of the things that we're going to get into more of. And I'm going to try to buy more of frozen, already frozen products that are farmed to school. The other thing, too, is we found is for a few years, we actually did refrigerator pickles. And that was a great, because you could hold them for a certain amount of time and just to get them served out. And the kids liked them, but I found I need to find a new recipe again. So, you know, they decided that they don't like things after a while. But yeah, moving into more the freezing of the products and trying to do those. And we've tried different things throughout the years. And we found what works, what doesn't work. And some things are just, green beans are just, there's a lot of work to those. So those are things that I won't buy, you know, fresh. Just because there's so much work to get it ready to do. But I will buy them if they're already frozen. So it's kind of balancing what you can do. But I think there's more out there than people realize. You know, like even our sweet corn, I've been buying it from one company because our kids didn't like the cheaper corn that we could get or like what I could get out of our commodities from the government. And so we were spending X amount of dollars for this case. Well, I found out that I could spend 50 cents more and I could get it farm to school. Guess what I'm doing? I'm buying the farm to school because I know it's going to be good. Sometimes you have to make those little sacrifices so you can find something else a little cheaper.
What have been some of the challenges? I guess both challenges that maybe you were able to overcome, but maybe some challenges that just, are still a challenge that you have to deal with doing something like this.
I think the challenge that I'll probably always have to deal with it will be staffing. You know, it used to be I had to get them to buy in, and we've kind of gotten past the buy-in because they realize how much better it is and how much, you know, the taste and the quality and that type of thing. So the buy-in is there now, but sometimes I just don't, I physically do not have enough staff, you know, and that's something that I think will always be there. You know, we have the infrastructure as far as, you know, equipment and space and that type of thing. And then the only other challenge is that sometimes your growers can't get the products that you planned on.
Yeah.
You know, this year in particular, I was planning on purchasing sweet corn and their crop just failed. And that happens because where they live, there's a lot of water there. So, which I totally understand. That just happens. And you just have to deal with that because you may not get what you planned on. So you either try to find it somewhere else or you just don't have that product. But those are really the biggest challenges, you know, and my hope is I can continue to expand, you know, different farmers, different products. You know, whenever I hear about them, you know, something new out there, I try to find it. I would love to see it continue to expand as long as I can keep within my budgets and stuff. But I would love to see my farm to school be, you know, not just 10, 12, 15%. I'd love to see that 20, 25. A lot of it has to do with the products throughout the winter. We're in Minnesota. You can't grow broccoli here in Minnesota in December. It just doesn't work. So it's finding ways to of making that work as, you know, like I said earlier, freezing products, you know, saving things in the cooler. They last a long time if you have them at the right temperature. But, you know, and buying as much as you can for as long as you can. You know, if there's farmers out there looking for, and they're a producer and they have fruits and vegetables, that type of thing, yeah, call your local school. Not all schools do this, but if one school says, well, no, we don't do that, call another one. See if they're available. If that's something that you want to do and you want to be a part of, call them. Because that helps, because it's hard sometimes to go out and look. And sometimes you can put it out there that you're looking and you'll have everybody calling you, but they have, you know, 5 pounds, which, yeah, I'll take, but it's not enough for me to do a whole meal. You know, if that's what you're interested, call the schools. Call the local people that use your products.
That really fits in with something else I wanted to ask you about, was advice both for farmers who want to maybe create a relationship with their local school or local institution, but also for schools who maybe are want to dip their toes into this and kind of get going into farm to school. But let's start with, and you touched on this a little bit, but any other advice to farmers who maybe are, who really want to connect with a local school and see that as a more of a consistent market for them?
You know, I guess I would call and talk to your schools. And I know that a lot of times if you're a local grower, you're looking at your products, what are you going to grow? You're going to start in January. And for schools, we aren't always going to know until probably the end of February into March, because we're ordering all of our commodities for the next year. What are we doing? And making our plans. But if you connect with them, like in January, you know, beginning of February, and start the conversation with them. And if they are absolutely not interested, try again the next year. But if they show an inkling that they might be interested, call back. Because sometimes life gets really busy.
Yeah.
And I know it gets busy on both sides. So be persistent. Yeah. And I guess that's the biggest thing I can say. And then ask, you know, what are they looking for? What is the school looking for? Or let them know, these are the things that I consistently grow every year. Are those things that you might be interested? And if one school isn't, go to the next and let them know, you know, are you willing to deliver or do they have to pick up? Ask the questions on those type of things. If you have certifications or if you've done any gap training, let them know. And if you haven't, let them know that too. You know, not everybody I purchase from is going to have, gap. They just aren't out here. And I don't expect that. But if they have plans, they have those things in place, let the school know that you've done that part of your homework. But yeah, just keep calling.
And maybe don't show up at the back of the cafeteria, the kitchen door at 11 a.m. with a bushel of cucumbers. Maybe that's a no-no.
Probably not a great idea. Not at 11, maybe come mid-morning or right after lunch, like 12:31, find out when are they there? When do they leave? And sometimes we know that it doesn't always work for when they come, and I try to accommodate them because they're busy too. And sometimes I just have to say, yep, just give me a minute. Like this morning, my local Apple, he came with a delivery, and I'm like, yep. And he was looking for me, and I was in the freezer or in the cooler trying to get a cart unloaded so I could get his apples on it. It goes both ways on that.
Great. Well, so yeah, what advice for a food service director or somebody who is involved with serving food at the local school, if they want to start looking into something like this, what advice would you have for them?
Start out with one thing. Find one thing that you want to try. Try it with your kids, and if it works, continue to serve it. Mm-hmm. And once you've figured out how to do that one thing, then add. Just add as you get comfortable. Okay. And some things are easier. You can get some things through your local distributor because they do buy a lot of local products. But like I said, just add that one thing. And maybe you buy certain things buy apples from a local orchard. And then maybe get your wild rice through your distributor. Those are the type of things that you can do one step at a time. And when you find that works and you have that figured out, then you add the next thing. Not all people are like me, and you jump in and add, 10 different things in one year.
Right.
And if that's how you work, great. Most people do not. And talk to other directors, talk to other people, look at other programs. What do they do? Do a little bit of research.
I don't know what your background is, if you had always worked in food service or what, but I get a sense that this is really the whole farm to school thing, that you really enjoy feeding people and enjoy this, the business itself or the profession itself, but that this farm to school maybe has added a little bit of fun or a little bit of creativity that you kind of groove a little bit on where can I source this or how can I, that you're willing, that it sounds like it's kind of maybe added a little bit of a spark to a job which can be a bit of a grind, I assume, every day you're serving food kind of thing.
Farm to school really is my thing. A lot of the other directors, when somebody will ask, oh, do you know anything about farm to school? They'll say, nope, just ask Janine. So it is really something that I'm very passionate about. I grew up the youngest of six kids on a dairy farm where we had, our dairy cows, we had our steers that we, used for butcher. We had hogs, we had chickens. My mom, we were always in 4-H, and my mom was a great one to have this long, big garden. And every year we'd grow something different. I remember her growing peanuts one year.
Oh.
And I was very disappointed in the fact that they did not taste like peanuts when we dug them up. They were horrible, but we would try just anything different. And as I had my own children, I found that my siblings, we all gardened because even though we hated picking weeds growing up, we all garden, even to this day, which is really kind of funny. And now I'm finding that my own children garden, even though, they did not like picking weeds either. Or going out there and having to do stuff.
Yeah.
But we all like the products. We were eating local produce when it wasn't a movement.
Mm-hmm.
That's just what you did. And it's kind of a cool thing when I think about when the National School Lunch Program started back in the 30s. They were told to go and have gardens and to can and to process products to use in the school meals. That's how it started. So it's almost like we're going back to where we came from, which is kind of cool. Even at home, it's kind of fun when you make a meal and you find that the eggs were from your kid and you're having the bacon, he raised the hogs and the potatoes you grew in your garden. And yeah, and the coffee you're drinking is from your local roaster,
yeah.
Which yes, we don't grow the coffee here, but they roasted it. So it's kind of local, which we actually use coffee for our high schoolers. We sell lattes in the morning, and the coffee is from a local roaster. So it's not just all farm to school. I try to get more local things in. So the more that you can do and build around your community, the better off your community is. And, you know, they're the ones that are supporting you too.
Here's a little podcast bonus. I couldn't resist the temptation to record Janine while we were standing in one of the kitchen's coolers, and she gave me an enthusiastic rundown of what locally produced products are stored there. Okay, I'll be frank. It gave me a chance to spend more time chilling out before I had to head back into a strangely hot October afternoon. Anyway, here's some extra audio of Janine's local foods tour. Yeah, Janine, so here we are on October 3rd, and we just walked into one of your walk-in coolers, and I gotta say, I'm pretty impressed at the what you got here that is locally sourced from local foods. Can you just give us a little bit of a tour of what all we're looking at here on the shelves?
Sure. So right now we've got apples that came from Country Blossom Orchard. I just received a shipment of about 27 cases this morning. I also have some cantaloupe, a bunch of cantaloupe, and a lot of watermelon from the Lismore farm. I also have grape tomatoes. Some are just red, but a lot of them are multicolored, which is my favorite when they are wondering, the kids are wondering how these things got all these different colors, and that's fun to explain how that actually works in the plant world. We have radishes, and a lot of times we'll get not just the cherry bells or the red ones, we'll get the watermelon and the daikon. The purple daikon are actually my favorite. Yeah, so we also have eggs that we get every week, and we'll get those throughout the whole year, which is really fun. We've got some potatoes. I've got some from our school garden. I also have potatoes from a local producer. We also have got a bunch of bullhorn peppers. And those are really fun. So they're not a nice bell pepper, but they make wonderful peppers when we cut them up in strips for our kiddos. We also have got a bunch of squash, butternut squash, that we will, at some point when we have a little time, we will take and freeze and then use it up. We've got a bulk carrots. We've got quite a few cases of those, and we will take and eventually slice those up and freeze those for later use. Otherwise, we're just using them as we need them. We've got some Minnesota pears, and I was able to catch a few cases of those this year, so hopefully next year I'll be able to find where they came from and get more of those. They're a little smaller, but they're really sweet, and they're fun. So I've got some lettuce that we're sampling out, some greens that we're going to sample that out.
You had mentioned this before, but we're in one of these two big walk-in coolers you have, and you said that's kind of changed your life and kind of changed your how you approach farm to school. I mean, it is really clear when you walk in here why. You are able to really extend the season quite a bit.
You know, we are. It makes it so that I can get larger amounts too all at once so that I don't have to have multiple deliveries. And like when I buy my cantaloupe and my watermelon, I buy 200-300 pounds at a time of each. And that's a lot. And like my apples, I wouldn't be able to have this many cases. I'd only be able to maybe have 8 or 10 at a time, but now I can have just a couple weeks. So it helps with the producer end when they're delivering things, when I can take larger amounts. But I could not do this many things if I had to rely on the coolers that I have already. There just isn't enough room. And the freezer is really kind of nice because I can get, you know, I can buy 2-3 steers and put them in that freezer and we're good to go for the year. Well, probably not quite, but, or I'm getting 4 hogs that'll come in later this month and I'll have room to put them in there and we will use that throughout the year. Same thing with our tomatoes. We can freeze it and have it in there and then that's what we use through the whole year. You know, and that's a lot of the nice thing about being able to do that and having a place to store. And so both of my kitchens use from these two coolers. They each have their own coolers, but when they need the products, they come back here, they get it here first. And if they don't have it here, then we have to order it, but that'll be a sad day.
Very cool. It's very cool. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. It literally cool. It's very cool in here, but it's 90 degrees outside right now. So it's a little bit like a little bit of fall inside of here, you know, like all the bounty of the fall is stuck right in these little coolers here. It's really cool.
It is. And the smell in here, you get all the nice melons and everything. It's quite heavenly.
To read the report, Building the Farm to School Network in West Central Minnesota, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 385 at landstewardshipproject.org. Also on that page, you'll find a link to LSP's community-based food systems page, as well as resources related to Minnesota Farm to School grants. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendell, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.